You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Mashed potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Delicious. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Hope you had a great weekend. Great weekend to go to the farmer's market. All kinds of wonderful things, of course, as always. And we'll be touching on farmer's markets throughout the hour today. One thing I wanted to tell you, though, next week, if all goes well, and I think it should, we'll be rebroadcasting an interview that I did almost exactly 10 years ago with Chef Judy Rogers of Zuni Cafe. Judy died on Monday of very rare cancer, cancer of the appendix, which I'd never heard of before, and I don't think many people have. She was as wonderful a guest as she was at everything else she did. Zuni Cafe is, you ask people their favorite San Francisco restaurant, and they often say Zuni Cafe. Even Lark says, yes, I agree. So we are going to do a little editing on that show and do some updating. Zuni Cafe and the wonderful Zuni Cafe cookbook, which was the reason she was here, received James Beard Awards, and she the following year received a Best Chef, and I think it was Best Chef, not Best Chef Regional, but Best Chef that following year. So we'll be adding some updates and saying our own personal farewell to somebody who left us much too young. She was only 57, really an extraordinary person in that she just made food, simple food, compellingly good. And in a lot of ways, I think that's what it should be about. No foam on my plate, please. I don't think there's ever been any foam at Zuni, one of the reasons I love it. And on that note, let me introduce our one guest tonight. Last week, we had a full house. Tonight, we have Joe Reuter, correct?
Correct.
Of Greengrocer. And if I remember correctly, you had a place in Windsor.
Yeah, in 2008.
And I interviewed you there, and I wrote about you for Savor.
Savor Magazine. I think you may have. Yes,
yes I did. Yeah. I did. So you had a brick-and-mortar store that was not on wheels, and now you have something on wheels. Tell us about it.
Well, we have several things on wheels these days, including me occasionally at the farmer's market with my rollerblades and antics and whatnot.
And you had a collapsing, you have a collapsing grill.
The grills are all on wheels. We have sexy grills on wheels, G-R-I-L-L-S. Yes.
I saw the grill come down a couple weeks ago at the Sebastopol market.
Yeah, some of them are not so sexy. We have a greasy grill.
Yes. So are you doing all mobile now?
We are a mobile kind of a transient catering company, if you will. So we're sticking to mostly catering, focusing on farm direct foods Only local, organic, and delicious, mm-hmm. as always, but mainly focusing on what we can find in season at the farmer's market, developing a lot of these relationships with people at the farmer's mm-hmm. market in order to bring the most fresh, highest quality seasonal produce to our catering clients.
Now, when you say catering clients, do you mean, you don't mean the people who come to you at the market?
They often do become catering clients.
Okay, but I'm so you. Your business is a twofold, because I know you primarily these days from people, you know, just getting lunch or breakfast at the market. So you also do a lot of. So is that the two main things you do?
Currently, yes. The two main things are catering, which you wouldn't be so much in the public eye,
right?
And at the farmer's market, where we do see uh-huh. you know, hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Every weekend as customers and as guests.
Yeah. How many markets do you do? How many farmers markets?
This time of year, we're doing 4 farmers markets a week. We do the Santa Rosa Market at the Wells Fargo Center mm-hmm. for the Arts. Mm-hmm. That's every Wednesday morning mm-hmm. and every Saturday morning.
So you do, okay, you do both.
We do both, religiously. 52 weeks a year, rain or shine.
Cool.
And then we've actually recently just added this Friday, because of your blog, actually. Oh. I saw that the
Valley Market?
The Sonoma Valley Market is year-round, which
yes.
I'm oblivious most of the time
it's year-round
to things that happen in yeah. that valley.
And they extended their hours so that people could enjoy lunch.
Exactly why yeah. we're headed over there this Friday
oh, great.
For the first appearance.
Uh-huh.
So I spoke with Hilda, who's yes. a sweetheart on the
yeah,
phone.
Yeah, Hilda.
And I kind of can't wait to see what the mix of people is over there. Some mm-hmm. of our favorite vendors and farmers are there, but there's a very good... world-class baker, an artisan
yes.
baker there. And his name is eluding me, but I will meet him in person.
And he's got a hard-to-pronounce name because it uses a different alphabet.
Well,
and I think it just pronounced it baker, but it's B-J-K-R, I don't know.
Here, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah, his soft pretzels are hugely popular. When he pulls those out of the oven, there is a long line snaking.
Okay.
It is really fabulous breads.
Really great.
And Paul's Produce is there. Mm. And, you know, Paul's Produce has... But Paul, and I forget his last name right now, Paul had Paul's Produce, and then I think he worked at another farm for a while farming and then has Paul's Produce. But he's, you know, countywide, he is one of the great growers. And one of the ways I measure people, and I'd be interested in how you measure people, is by their carrots. You know, do their carrots, number one, do they have snap? Do they have snap, and do they have the right kind of sweetness? And Paul's do.
Paul's do.
Yes.
Well, in
Paul's
that case,
do.
Then I must attribute Tom Noble of
Armstrong
Valley Farm for his stellar heirloom carrots.
Oh, Paul's.
He's been supplying
Tom's,
us.
Yeah, Tom has fabulous carrots. Fabulous carrots. Different
Absolutely.
Varieties than Paul's.
But I'm not sure you could gauge a man by his carrots then.
I don't know if you can gauge a man, but I do gauge farms.
Tom's wonderful. But.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that you often get all his eggs before. If I get to the market late, I sometimes miss out on eggs because you get them all.
If we have any, we're happy to just sell them to you. You know,
oh, good
even price. We can just
oh,
give
good
them
to
you.
Know.
No
good.
Markup at all.
Good to know. So I know that with catering, and well, with any restaurant, you do tons of prep before you start to cook. That's, in a way, a lot of it. But I also know that you buy a lot of your ingredients directly at the farmer's market. So how do you make all that work?
Well, we do the majority of the prep at the farmer's market.
You do.
Some things, you know, of course, take a little more time. The duck tacos, crispy duck tacos.
Mm-hmm.
We use exclusively organic duck from Salmon Creek Ranch
mm-hmm.
in Bodega.
Know them well.
We buy whole ducks, spend hours butchering them, and mm-hmm. then curing them, the legs, mm-hmm. and then turning them into duck confit, mm-hmm. which is a kind of traditional French method,
mm-hmm.
which takes about 3 days.
Oh, 3 days? Okay.
3 days of work. So that we do in a commercial
uh-huh.
kitchen.
Uh-huh.
But the majority of our prep for service, as it would traditionally be done in the restaurant before service,
mm-hmm.
We do during service, and that's part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
We do this because I don't believe in cutting tomatoes and storing them in under refrigeration.
Oh, sure.
The Board of Health sometimes gets on me about that, but when they see how quickly we are using those tomatoes, they understand.
What do they say to you about that?
Well, there's certain parameters where if you are going to be doing prep beforehand, mm-hmm. you would like to slice all your tomatoes, put your tomatoes in a food-grade container,
mm-hmm.
and store them, you know, kind of buried in ice in the cooler.
Right.
Our tomatoes never see the cooler.
And they shouldn't, because it changes their texture.
And we don't cut a tomato until it's ready to go on to the sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we avoid that kind of in-between mm-hmm. stage.
And
really,
good
if
with
you
that.
Think about it,
the health department is okay.
They are okay with that. It's, once they see that the tomato is being sliced and going right into a sandwich, mm-hmm. it's just then assembled carefully and mm-hmm. then sliced carefully and mm-hmm. handed right to a customer over the counter, they're right on board with
this. Oh, cool. That's great.
So, but that sort of attention to freshness and detail has oftentimes my sous chef, Sean, and one of our really great cooks, Aaron, a little bit scattered because
sure.
At the Heirloom Expo this year, we served over 1,400 BLTs.
There's someone after my own heart.
And also at the Gravenstein Apple Fair this year, mm-hmm. We did the metrics and figured out that we made an average of one BLT per minute.
Wow.
That we were open and selling at the Apple Fair.
Tell me how you make your BLTs.
Well, it's an assembly process mm-hmm. That goes back to, once again, the kitchen ergonomics, mm-hmm. So to speak. Again, why, you know. We toast the bread, flip the bread over.
What kind of bread do you use?
Full Circle Bakery.
Okay, yeah.
We like the sprouted whole wheat and the sprouted sourdough. Those mm-hmm. are the two that we've selected due to their high rise and large top.
Mm-hmm.
But the three pieces of bread become toast on our flat top griddle we like to call plancha. It's a la plancha, a Spanish cooking.
Mm-hmm. Plank?
Yeah, cooking piece of equipment. These griddles are about 480 to 600 degrees, depending on the area.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll basically lay down the three pieces of bread, turn them over once they've been toasted. Takes about 15 to 20 seconds. And then once you flip them over, and a whole avocado is cracked, we call them ajis. So we'll crack an aji, take the pit out, put the avocado with the skin and the cut side down onto both pieces of bread, two of the three, get the avocado. And then simply squeeze. So you remove the entire avocado by shucking it, and just mm-hmm. the skin comes off, the avocado's left. And then we hit it with two pieces of our heritage bacon,
mm-hmm.
Crisscrossed on top of the avocado. Each avocado gets two slices, so there's four slices mm-hmm. on the sandwich. And then a handful of arugula onto each. And then a generous helping, usually it's about two heirloom tomatoes per mm-hmm. sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
We like to mix and match colors for mm-hmm. flavor,
any
visual
salt in
appearance.
There along the way?
That's coming.
Okay,
not
on
the way.
Not on the avocado, okay.
No, not on the avocado.
Okay.
And then, so the tomatoes perched atop the arugula, and then we drizzle extra virgin olive oil mm-hmm. and a gray sea salt
mm-hmm.
Over the top. And then we'll take the BLT and we'll kind of assemble it. And that's the tricky part. Once you get it down, you can do it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, they fall over. It's a mess. Tomatoes slide out. But you take the top piece of bread and put it on top of your tomatoes. And then take the other portion and lift it up carefully mm-hmm. and set it on top. So it's like assembling almost two sandwiches into
one. It's almost like a club. A
blat. It is what we call it, a Dagwood style.
A Blatt Club.
A Blatt's Club. I try to stay away from the BLAT version. The Blatt, at least. We do add avocado to just about everything on the menu.
Uh-huh.
We choose not to really say that all the time. Mm-hmm. People sometimes are questioning, will there be avocado on my BLT? Of mm-hmm. course.
Uh-huh.
There's avocado.
Interesting. And so you've stopped serving that now.
Actually,
are
no.
Are you still?
Thanks to Lazaro Calderon.
Lazaro, yeah.
And the patch in Santa Rosa. Or no,
he's in
Sonoma.
Sonoma Valley.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In Sonoma
he's
Valley,
in a special little microclimate.
His hometown.
Yeah.
Well, that and he has three 300-foot greenhouses.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He has just bestowed upon us the last of his tomatoes. We thought this mm-hmm. was going to be the last week.
Mm-hmm.
But he gave me a pretty sweet deal and gave me the rest of his heirlooms from the season. So
uh-huh.
we'll carry through into next week.
Oh,
and with the cold holding temperatures, it'll be fine to keep those tomatoes through the weekend of next week.
Wow. Interesting. What's that sandwich cost?
BLT is a $14 BLT.
Uh-huh. And
the
big appetite or sharing size?
I can eat one myself
okay.
and be hungry still.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It is, it's definitely a meal in itself. I'd say most people do share it. It's
uh-huh.
appropriate. Other people will come back and order two or three to share amongst two people.
Uh-huh.
The thing is that it is a large sandwich, but The ingredients are such that they're not heavy. They don't really sit. The Full Circle Bakery bread is sprouted, so mm-hmm. therefore it's more easily assimilated into mm-hmm. the body. The avocado is quite a bit, but mm-hmm. still the sandwich, it rides lightly. I don't know if you've had one.
I think I did very early on when you were first in Santa Rosa.
The BLT has been around for 2 years now.
Yeah, very early on.
And we do offer a half size mm-hmm. For $8.
Yeah, I may have had a half. I'm very religious. I, you know, that's my religion. My religion is the BLT. So I'm very careful about the very first one I have because there's ritual involved. And then I eat all different ones after the first ritual. And I'm very passionate about BLTs. Mm. So
we are anyway, too.
Yes. Yes. And I think it's a really good thing too. I mean, we could do a whole show just on BLTs.
Absolutely. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Well, let's do that when tomatoes come in. Because, I'm going to try to make it, it'll be the 15th. I'm going to try to come and have a final BLT because I've quit eating them now. I had my last one about 3 or 4 weeks ago, but maybe I'll have one last one this year because I don't eat them until we have local tomatoes again.
Right, that's when they're best.
And yeah,
a lot of those, like the striped German tomato, mm-hmm. is the best tomato for a BLT. Also, the yellow heirlooms, the more yellow varieties,
the yellow heirlooms, and there was one. When we take a musical break, I'll think of the name that Lazaro had this year and last year was just phenomenal for a BLT, and it was a slightly different color. Was it the
Cherokee purple, perhaps?
No, it was not a Cherokee purple. It had a greenish tinge, and it's fairly
we
new.
We did use a few of those, just because when you mix those colors and then the different acidities in the different tomatoes, the more different varieties you have on there, the better. And there is about a half a pound of heirloom tomato on each BLT. And a lot of people maybe don't know this, but we are slightly offended when people scoff at our pricing. But we run an average of a 45% to 55% food cost, where if you know anything about restaurants, 20% to 33%, 36% is high.
Pizza parlors run usually, a good pizza parlor will do 26%, 27%. A high-end restaurant starts getting in trouble from their accountant if they go over 32% to 33%. So running at 45% is...
Well, our average is actually 55%.
55%.
We're dangerous.
Oh, our guest is insane. On that note, we'll take a little musical break and we'll be right back.
Don't come any closer, don't come any nearer. My baby.
Dave Edmonds, Girls Talk. One of the reasons that I wanted you to be on the show tonight is because we just had some great chit chat through Facebook. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you are really passionate about, and I'm going to take a wild guess here and say that one of the reasons you run pretty high with your food costs is your passion really has to do with being honest about local foods.
Absolutely.
You want to jump into that topic?
Well, for me, it's really not necessarily, and my investors are going to hate hearing this, about making money. It's about supporting local farmers, building local community, and really being a part of what is Sonoma County, and really exemplifying that through food and putting really great quality food in front of people. And that is where the passion is. It lies, and it's in that. It's derived from the traditional restaurants and the method of procuring, you know, where you cook, pick up a phone and place an order and your produce arrives in the morning magically on a truck, maybe from a place called Sonoma County Growers Exchange. But, you know, where did that really come from? Mm-hmm. Why is it on this truck? How did it get neatly packed into cases and labeled and stamped? And why is it showing up at my door? And so when you go to a restaurant, you have to realize this is going on. The chefs are making phone calls to and having purveyors bring them all this food, and it's out of convenience, which is the natural traditional sense of this whole industry around food service. But the problems I have with that are a lack of quality, a lack of nutrient value, and I don't want anything I ever serve to ever see the inside of a walk-in. Or the inside of a truck, other than the farmer's truck, of mm-hmm. course. But I firmly believe that, and there's research to back this up, mm-hmm. that when, say, something like a head of lettuce enters a walk-in refrigerator, the change in humidity, and you close that door, there's more humidity or less humidity in a walk-in, but either way, it's a constant, whereas in the world naturally, cells respirate and off-gassing occurs. But as soon as you put all these vegetables now together into a closed room, they rapidly lose vitamin C content, other micronutrients, other flavonoids. Their flavor rapidly decreases and they become less and less healthy and less flavorful. And I think that flavor is an indicator of generally it's the vitamin nutrient content. Mm-hmm. So people ask why the BLT, for instance, is so amazing, or why the salsa and the duck tacos taste so great. People come back repeatedly and say, I've never tasted anything like this food. Why? And I am taken aback because I didn't expect that kind of response.
I mean, yeah, you're here in Sonoma County. People are shopping at farmers markets.
Yeah, and people are going to great restaurants all over Sonoma County. But what I realized, and it's really only dawned on me maybe in the last 6 months or so, is that it truly is that this fresh ingredients that I'm able to get my hands on and we're able to cook with at the farmers market really puts us in a different genre. We're not necessarily in competition with restaurants, obviously. And it's not so much about competition, but it's just that it enables us to access the most fresh, really morning harvested produce, tree ripe fruit. Mm-hmm. Just as a chef and a gastronomist, my ideals of finding food to cook with, and that's just the food I want to cook with. So in the end, well, in the beginning, rather, in order to find that type of food as a chef, I started farming and started growing, you know, my own food.
Oh, how much of your own food do you grow?
Well, currently zero. Okay. I don't have time to do that. Just like a chef doesn't have time to source local produce from farmers and run around to farmers markets, and it's easier to pick up a phone. I don't grow any food other than maybe, albeit, a couple herbs and you know, a few backyard chickens. And that project is actually still in the works.
Okay.
But as part of our you know, kind of interconnected sustainability project, where we have a zero waste plan, and we are attempting to take all our food waste and have it turn into product that we can sell, which would be great. Feeding compost to chickens is a great way to do that.
Sure.
So a lot of these things, as we just kind of streamline our business model, that we're starting to realize make a lot of sense. But really, the goal is just to put the freshest food on the plate that's possible, and to really have the best ingredients to cook with. And that's the type of food I want to eat. And for me, now I'm really frustrated because I don't like to cook for myself. And in fact, I won't go out of my way to cook for myself. If there's someone else involved.
What do you eat?
Well,
you get up in the morning?
And I can't go out to eat very often because certain places are closed.
Are you living on air?
Well, I mean, I eat out of necessity. And but it's just I don't focus on myself enough to want to cook for myself. So if there's someone to cook for, it's wonderful.
Okay.
Then I'll go through the effort of dirtying pans and cooking. But other than that, I'm constantly going out to eat and constantly scrutinizing and finding restaurants that I like and my morals are aligned with, and people that are going out of their way to find local produce. And so in doing this whole farmers market thing, you know, it came about because we were farming. Because we were trying to raise food for my catering company. We were growing pigs and chickens and duck and sheep and goats. And, you know, it was like a whole Joel Salatin spread there with rotational pastures.
Now, was this while you had the brick-and-mortar store in Windsor?
No.
It was after you closed it.
No, it was after we closed that, and actually a few years later.
Okay.
I had been catering kind of to, after we closed that, there was some outstanding debts to local vendors and as our mission was to support local farmers and local people and artisans, I was not going to leave those debts and just close the store and walk away. So I continued our catering, and which was a successful portion of the business. I continued that on in order to pay back something like $67,000 in debt in that first year. And then it became easy enough to do the catering as my source of income. So I did that moderately, but always trying to find local ingredients. But then as it became more real that they were not readily available, I mean, you go to farmers markets and you pay high prices, and even in Sonoma County, you know, trying to run a catering operation with a food cost and trying to run a restaurant, a cafe, or even a grocery store, with those margins, realistically, it's very hard to do. And I think...
What do you see as the biggest hurdles to doing that successfully?
Time. You run out of time. You're tired at the end of the day. If you have to worry about leaky floor sinks and employee needs and everything else, and, you know, making sure, you know, staying on top of what your customers are looking for, you may not always have time to source the
most. We've got a couple places. We've got, what is it, Feed Sonoma, the wholesale company. We've got a couple of, two or three, that are trying to bring... you know, trying to gather farm products and get them to people like you.
Right. Well, you know, there are, that's the other side of that coin, where there are these quote unquote middlemen. And in society today, we need them because not everybody does everything. I learned that by farming and getting burned out on farming and catering at
farming
the same time.
Farming is so hard, and catering is so, those are two of, I think, the hardest things you can do in the food world.
I don't know how to pull that off successfully with the high overhead of a retail brick-and-mortar establishment to be able to run a food cost. If we had a brick-and-mortar establishment to be able to run a food cost of 55%,
couldn't do it.
We'd be out of business by the end of the month. We wouldn't be able to pay the bills unless we had very deep pockets and were just morally conscious and morally
working for
wanting
free.
To do it to work for free. Exactly. So speak about working for free in any case. So we really wouldn't be able to exist in a restaurant with the food costs we do, we have, and at least not with the traditional model. And so that's where being at these farmers markets really comes into play. and being there where the farmers are, developing those relationships. And what you'll find out as a local restaurateur, perhaps, is that once a relationship is developed, farmers will go out of their way to bring you produce if they know you are a regular account.
Absolutely.
And so really, it's not about those intermediary organizations, mm-hmm. and perhaps that's the wrong way to look at it. It's, I think that if, and I would implore consumers in the area that are food conscious, local food conscious, and want the best quality ingredients to go to your grocer and to go to your restaurateur and to go to your chef and ask them and scrutinize them and be, do your due diligence. And if you're having a Caesar salad, ask where the romaine came from. And, you know, and let them know through that asking that you're not, that you really do want a local source. You want that food dollar to stay in the local economy because it's good for mm-hmm. The farmer down the street. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is that farmers will grow a variety of things in or out of season with hothouses, and they'll grow anything you want mm-hmm. in the end, within reason. And when you look at it from a dollars and cents point of view, and having run restaurants and opened restaurants and worked in restaurants for years prior to this, you order a case of romaine lettuce, 12 heads show up or 24 heads show mm-hmm. up. And realistically, a lot of those outer leaves you're peeling off because they're no longer desirable to put on the plate. Mm-hmm. Maybe 4 or 5 of those heads go bad in the walk-in. And, you know, maybe you don't sell them all by the end of the night. And you're constantly playing this game where you're losing product. Whereas if you knew that you had a local source, if you changed to a local source for that lettuce, I'm sure that you could find a replacement in your local community for every head of romaine that you were going through. You'd be paying more for it, so you'd be a little more scrupulous over how much you were using, and perhaps you may run out sometimes, which is an 86 of an item in a restaurant is the most horrible thing that can happen usually. But oftentimes, if you can explain to a customer perhaps that that's because of our local sourcing and whatnot, we mm-hmm. don't want to waste a lot of lettuce. Either way, if you want to order a case from a local farmer, the reverse there is that a local farmer oftentimes will then pick up anything that's going bad or your outer leaves and take that compost, bring it back to their farm and go full circle and turn it into a usable product in the way of chicken feed or manure or compost.
I love that full circle. I don't see it happening as much as I wish it did.
It's a very hard thing to make those kind of connections within the community.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things that I've really admired Chez Panisse and Bob Kennard about.
Yes.
Because he would drive down there once or twice a week and come back with his big old huge open truck full of Chez Panisse compost. There'd be bread and then just all of the various vegetables.
Well, and that's what we did in a small version with the catering. When we mm-hmm. did have the farm for about 3 years there, you know, that was a very closed system. And it was great for things like soil building, composting, and raising eggs and chickens mm-hmm. to see that. And the pigs, of course, eat everything except avocado pits. Do not ever feed avocados to pigs.
What happens?
Well, there's a certain point, about 160 to 180 pounds, where a pig, when they're littler, they can't swallow the avocado pit.
Stuck?
We lost 3 animals, especially one of our best breeding animals, our heritage breed, Red Wattle, due to this problem. And when they're older, they can just swallow them and they go right through. But it's right when they're kind of, so to speak, coming of age, about 140 to 160 pounds, that an avocado pit is the perfect size to get lodged in their throat.
Oh, Heimlich maneuver on a pig is probably
well, you don't usually stick around after you slop the pigs. You know, you head for the hills because they make kind of a lot of noise when you do that.
Oh, poor pigs.
In any case, raising animals, raising food is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And the people that do it for us deserve tremendous amount of respect.
Absolutely.
And not only the people, but the vegetables themselves, the hard work that goes into them, the hard work that local people do put into raising food. That's a lot of times why we don't do things like silly things like peel. We don't peel carrots. We don't, we make sure we utilize every little bit mm-hmm. of our trim. And then if we have a pile of compost or scraps at the end, we make sure we have somewhere for it to go, whether it's into pickles, into a kimchi, into a sauerkraut, or ideally, hopefully, into chickens. Mm-hmm.
And what do you do with carrot tops?
Chickens.
Oh, chickens. Okay.
I think they're a bit bitter. People say they're a good replacement for parsley, but I don't go there.
Yeah. And some people, I've seen a couple people make carrot top pesto.
Hmm.
And also carrot top broth. Hmm. And you can do it, but you need not to use very much.
Exactly.
Just a little bit. It's a little overpowering. But you see it more in Chinese medicine.
If you're buying carrots with tops, especially at the farmer's market, one of the best things you can do, one of the most socially conscious things you can
give
do
them
is
back.
Twist the top off and hand them right back to the farmer. And he's going to throw them over the fence to his chickens as soon
as
he gets
home. Yeah.
And if you're a farmer without chickens, you are without. You really need to have a fully enclosed system on your farm. And there's a lot of waste that's going to be happening if you are a farmer.
And the chickens take all that good stuff and give us eggs. And it's just this little miracle.
Which is invaluable.
Yeah. An egg is such an amazing... Well, we're not going to talk about vegans tonight, if we can avoid that.
No, we can.
We can, okay.
We like vegans. Vegans challenge us. We did a lesbian wedding. Then they were...
That's believable.
They were both vegan, but they requested that I inflict their veganness upon all their guests. And so they demanded upon their guests that they all eat vegan for the night. Mm-hmm. That was what I meant to say. And
hey, it's one meal. Go with what the bride and bride want.
Yeah, and they were great. And so they came to the farmer's market and they did a tasting with us. And Sean and I barely put anything together and we wowed them.
Mm-hmm.
We knocked their socks off.
Cool. So do you remember the menu?
Barely. What we did do is we did 4 past hors d'oeuvres that were all vegan, and then we did a 5-course meal, including the end was a vegan Swiss, quote-unquote, chocolate terrine, mm-hmm. and served it with persimmon and quince puree and pomegranate.
So a fall wedding.
The Swiss chocolate terrine. Yeah, this was at Saracena Vineyards up in Hopland, mid-October.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, but it was very challenging because coming up with that many vegan dishes to really exemplify our cooking style and do the justice for their wedding to put this together, this 5-course meal.
How many people?
I think it was 65 in the end.
Uh-huh.
So not a huge wedding, but a good number.
Yeah.
And it was what did we do? We did pumpkin gnocchi with quotations around the gnocchi. Because, of course, there's no eggs, so using flour and pumpkin puree to make pasta was not an option. I went back to my French Laundry days, actually, where we use fluted oval scoops, basically a melon baller, and just melon-balled pumpkins. And then back then we would do them in sous vide, which is a cryovac bag, and cook them with butter. We couldn't use butter. What we did was a griddle full of olive oil, and we griddled them with spices and toasted pumpkin seeds. And we got kind of creative and did a few different sizes of melon ball and then a few of these fluted oval balls and then with walnuts and made it.
It was pumpkin balls.
It was just pumpkin balls, but they looked like gnocchi.
Okay.
And we pulled it off. But that was the thing about the end of that dinner. Everybody was very happy. Even the big Texan guy that was there, everybody was ecstatic and really pulled it off and really glad to have been challenged in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And for vegans at the farmer's market, anything on our menu can be made vegan. We substitute either carrot bacon, heirloom carrot bacon, quote unquote, or delicata squash bacon, and we leave the seeds and the skin and the everything on the carrots, and we just kind of griddle them with olive oil, much like bacon or sometimes coconut oil, and then add them to the BLT.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one customer in particular that comes to pretty much every farmer's market in season and gets a carrot LT. And as soon as he walks up, we know carrot LT.
Yeah, I thought I came up with everything possible when I did my BLT book, but I did not come up with a carrot.
Well, I think we should
I did a ZLT, where just you shave zucchini.
Uh-huh.
And that substitutes for the bacon.
Shave zucchini is hardly a substitute for bacon.
It makes vegans happy.
True.
It makes vegans happy.
And that's the thing, when cooking for vegans, it's very important to think about their nutritional needs as well.
Yeah.
Always incorporating mushrooms and walnuts, or mushrooms and nuts, not necessarily walnuts, but so they get those other fatty acids that they're otherwise lacking in their diet. And And that's really, when you cook for someone, at least in my mind, in my philosophy, and that's kind of the more gastronomical approach. Mm-hmm. There's always a word, I should probably say this, that I'm really trying to get the general public of America to understand what gastronomy is, and you know, the not only the art, but the science behind food, where mm-hmm. it comes from, where it goes after you eat it, and how it comes back again, mm-hmm. and everything in between.
You're taking on the world, or at least the country.
Well, the country. In Europe, there's, you know, in Spain, there's the Institute of Gastronomy. Mm-hmm. You know, in France, the gourmands were all the mm-hmm. gastronomes and whatnot. But in America, you say gastronomy, and you think of stomach acid or indigestion or...
Well, we've got that...
Or your gas station. I don't know what people think of. I know what I think of.
Well, we've still got that brawn over brains, conquer the West attitude that is really strong. It's a strong, wide swath through Middle America. And, you know, I have all kinds of theories about how it functions. I mean, it's one of the reasons I think that certain wines are less popular, because people are intimidated by words that they can't pronounce immediately and don't know the meaning of immediately. And so they look down on it because they don't want to feel dumb, because they already do feel dumb. And on that note, it's time for more music here on Mouthful.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman, giving all your love to just one man. You'll have bad times, he'll have good times, doing things that you don't understand. But if you love him, you forgive him, even though he's hard to understand. And if you love him, oh, be proud of him, 'cause after all, he's just a man.
One of my favorite covers of all time, Stand By Your Man by Lyle Lovett. I wish I'd been at the Greek Theater when he played, and I think it was not long after his marriage to Julia Roberts. And I don't know if it was just before it ended or just after it ended, but it was like a week long or something, right? and in real San Francisco style, quote unquote, Julia Roberts came out and introduced him or sang with him or something. It was a drag queen from San Francisco. And I never saw the pictures, but I heard about it. And it just sounded like so much fun. So Bay Area. One of the things I want to talk about, because you're using words And you're using them in a very genuine way. Local, sustainable, you know, from the farm, all these things. And it doesn't matter what it is in America and probably anywhere in the world, but I'm more experienced here than anywhere else. It doesn't matter what it is. Once it sells, once it's been popularized, along come all of the businesses that are going to make a profit on it, on misusing the concept. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time, many years ago, I was at an event at, I can't even tell you the name of it because I'm not going to remember, but it was a hotel restaurant, and they managed to get a bunch of writers there. So I think the first or second time I met Heather Irwin before she was at the Press Democrat, and she leaned over and said something really funny, and she just says,
"I love Heather.
God, does all this local sustainable make you wanna, you know?" And she didn't say wanna go to McDonald's, but she said something equally entertaining, and it was so true. I mean, she completely nailed it, because those terms were used so many times, and we were in Napa Valley, and there was no way, I think it was in May, there was no way the Dungeness crab on the menu was local,
right,
or seasonal. You know, first of all, it's an inland valley.
It's frustrating.
And that goes on everywhere. In fact, two or three years ago, I wrote a column, one of my columns about it, because, you know, it's like local, you know, we always serve local, we always serve sustainable, and then the small print, which is written in invisible ink, if we can get it easily and cheaply.
Right.
So, and
when
I know,
it's convenient for us to,
yeah, when it's convenient. But yet those terms typically are not qualified, and we now see national commercials for national chain restaurants that are capitalizing on these terms. And, I mean, from Olive Garden and Lobster, whatever the lobster chain is, Red Lobster. And all these other things. And they're
even Walmart.
And I've actually never been in Walmart.
Now I'm in love with you.
Oh, thank you. I have to qualify that. I've been in Walmart once in Hilo. It's different. It's different in Hawaii. Because you can go to Walmart in Hilo, and I actually did have to, I put my arm through my friend's arm. It's like, all right, take me to the fabric. You can get things, you can get actual Hawaiian things there, but I've never, and I will never be in a Walmart. I'm one of those people, I will pay more to keep my friend Joe or whoever in business down the street from me. I will pay more. Didn't work with Traversos, but I still believe Traversos may come back. I mean, I want Oliver's Market. You know, I want my local markets. I want my local farmers markets. I want my local farmers to thrive. I don't buy books on Amazon because they're cheaper.
You know?
I go to brick and mortar bookstores that are owned by local people in Sonoma County. I buy clothes. You know, the socks I'm wearing today, I got at a store in downtown Sebastopol. And I try to do, you know, I try to do everything. I just bought four tires, and I bought them from Greg's in Sebastopol. And you can save money. Surely you can save money. But then you look around and what's your community, another strip mall.
Well, and your community begins to erode.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I mean. So I'm curious what you're finding. You eat out a lot because you don't think highly of yourself. You don't think highly enough of yourself to make a lovely meal every night.
Well, I just
know.
So
what are you finding?
In the end, it's like, for me at least, what I cook for myself, it doesn't taste as good. I don't know. It's kind of a lost cause.
I
know what goes into it. I know every little bit of it.
It's like catering.
When I begin
I could never
cooking,
eat my own
when
food
I begin
when
cooking,
I catered.
And the end result to me, even though it looks very appetizing to everyone else, is slightly unappetizing just because I know every little bit
about
it.
Exactly. I do understand that.
Excuse me.
It's okay. We're real here. It's real time.
Yeah. A real little cold brewing.
Oh, careful.
In any
chicken
case,
soup.
Yeah. I've been doing miso, actually.
Oh yeah. That helps, too.
Actually, you've just been asking, where do I go? I go to Ume in Windsor.
Uh-huh.
Ume Japanese Bistro.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
do you live in Windsor?
I do.
Oh, okay.
That's part of the convenience.
Yes.
But Ume is great because they do a really good job, have really excellent ingredients, and it's truly traditional Japanese food.
Mm-hmm.
And they have miso soup. And they have really great nebbiolki and other things. Mm-hmm. And escolar, which is butterfish.
Mm-hmm. Love butterfish.
And I always hot tea. And so especially when I'm in this time of year, when mm-hmm. colds come and go, I'm able to beat them very quickly by using, you know, probiotics. Mm-hmm. And for me, without wanting to cook for myself, if I'm by myself, I'll go have a bowl of miso soup. Mm-hmm. But other places to go, I love Zazu. We mm-hmm. eat there often. What are some of your favorites? Having a little trouble just pulling in.
Yeah, that's okay. I was just curious because you're so exacting about wanting to know that people are using real local ingredients. I'm curious who you're finding doing that. I mean, and you're only one guy. There's only so many meals in a week.
Well, see, that's hard. It's hard going to a restaurant, too, because you have to forego a little bit of that only local ingredients. And I'm not that scrupulous, so mm-hmm. to speak. For the model of what we're trying to do, and I do believe, at least I hope that it would be a model that of business that would catch on, is mm-hmm. to you know, show up and cook at the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. There's
a couple people doing it. There's, I think Gorilla Foods is doing that.
Yes.
Sweet little Gorilla Foods. I love them. Physis Foods. Are you at any of the markets that Physis
is at? We used to do
at
Windsor with them, and they also do the Valley of the Moon Market right in Sonoma Square. They're doing stocks and soups and salsas. He has a very great concept.
Is he doing things more? I just had an email from him. He's at the Sonoma Valley Market, too.
Yes.
He does things that people can then take home and build on, right?
Right. He does a lot of prepared foods. He basically shops the market and mm-hmm. Brings back and cooks in his trailer there. Mm-hmm. He has a mobile kitchen. He trailers around and does a lot of he's making local food more available to farmers market people that maybe don't want to make chicken stock. Maybe right. they want to make chicken noodle soup. And they want to buy carrots, and they want to buy celery, and they want to buy onions, and they want to buy a chicken. But then they don't know how to make the broth.
Right.
And he makes the broth.
He makes it. And you know who else is doing that now?
He's filling a gap there, too, which is great.
The Pepper Road Farm people are doing that. They sell chickens. You know, they raise chickens mm-hmm. and eggs. And they're now doing stock.
Right.
Which I thought was just, they're selling it at farmer's market. I thought that was brilliant. Because right. a lot of people are not obsessive like some of us are about always having stock in the freezer.
Well, again, you don't always have the time. I mean, okay, so you're going to take an hour out of your day to go to the farmer's market mm-hmm. as a individual or with a family, and then you're going to take another hour to make chicken broth, and then you're going to take, you know, another hour to take your kids to school. You run out of time in the day.
You get yourself a big crock pot. You put a chicken in the crock pot. Maybe you add an onion and a carrot and some parsley. You cover it with water and you put it on low and you leave it there for 24 hours. There you go. You got chicken stock.
Well,
I'm trying to teach. That's sort of my mission with my readership, is to show them that doing that sort of thing. Like I'm sort of the make stocks. You know, one thing to do is make stocks once a quarter. And just put them in your freezer so that you have them. And then, oh, you can make risotto. It's so easy. You can make chicken noodle soup. But I think if we all, you know, people like you, forget the name of the guy with Physis. Oh, what's his name? Anyway, I'll have him on so he can talk about it too. You know, all of us working together,
there are a lot of people that do cook at these farmers markets.
Yeah.
And they're a lot of the same people that cook at these other larger fairs and festivals mm-hmm. and community events. Mm-hmm. So they're not always so local minded, you know. Maybe if they run out of something, they'll go get it. But a lot of them shop cash and carry.
It's the ones who are local minded are the ones that I pay attention to. Those are the ones that I write about. Those are the ones, and frankly, those are the ones that I, you know, that's where I wish market managers would really.
Well, we're pushing them
to be picky. Because, you know, it's like support your farmers. Like Paula's really good at that, Paula Downing.
Absolutely.
She's fabulous at that. But it's like there's enough people cooking on this small scale now to make farmers markets all about the local farms.
Well, and I think it's something that we end up kind of inadvertently, we didn't really intend to do this, but we're kind of now the model for a lot of mm-hmm. these vendors that show up at the markets mm-hmm. that we're at. And they, you know, look to us for, you know, where do you get your grill? Where did you get you have a van, this and the other thing.
Is it a local grill?
No.
I'm teasing.
From Cabela's.
I'm teasing you.
But, well, in any case. So, but on a larger scale, and I was asked to speak at Humboldt State University. There's mm-hmm. a sustainability convergence there. And really what I asked a lot of those students to do is to question their local restaurateurs, the local grocery stores.
It's so good for college students to hear that.
Absolutely. And then letting them know, too, that on a larger scale, to be able to go to a new region to kind of attack a farmer's market and get to know all the vendors and start. And the best way to do that is by cooking there. You find out who all the farmers are, who knows who, maybe who's not coming to the market, who has eggs, who has this product that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And then to then help local restaurateurs in that area. And Sean and I have also been talking about starting a kind of consulting business mm-hmm. where we go to a region, go to the farmer's market, do our thing as the green grocer, where we kind of become everyone's best customer, ultimately, at the market, and cook with the product, developing a little following, and show people what mm-hmm. you can do.
And on that
then
note,
go to restaurants. Yeah.
I'm going to surprise you. On that note, we're out of time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you'll
Could
have
I
to
give
come
one
back.
Little drop yeah. at the end?
Oh, you were doing something. You have
yeah,
something coming
Yeah, we have a takeover of Snow Bunny Restaurant in Healdsburg on the plaza. It's actually Snow Bunny is a frozen yogurt shop.
Right.
And we'll be there from December 16th through December 22nd. Serving all kinds of holiday treats, but lots of macro bowls and everything. Something for everyone. Duck tacos, vegan cool. things.
Well,
we hope to see you there. And if it goes well, we'll be permanent.
Oh,
so
cool.
Please do come and visit us.
And, you know, I'll get details about that and I'll post them on the Facebook page. We're almost up to 500 likes. I'll also put it in the mouthful column. Thank you so much. It's Joe Reuter from Green Grocers. Do you have a website?
Yes. We have thegastronomist.org and greengrocerdirect.com.
Okay, and I will post those on the Mouthful Facebook page as well. And on that note, we are out of time. Next week, we will hear the 03 interview with the late Judy Rogers, a wonderful chef and a wonderful woman. Have a great week. Take care of yourself and take care of each other.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Got some beans and good cornbread. Listen to what the preacher says.